The Social Detective is a true crime podcast meant for adult audiences. Some material might be explicit, contain adult language and descriptions of crimes that aren't suitable for young or sensitive listeners. The contents of this podcast are for educational purposes only. We do provide sources in our show notes for further research for our listeners. We also provide our opinions, which we state in the podcast. We will never post, theorize, or provide information that would endanger a case for the victims, families, or law enforcement. We refuse to sensationalize cases to gain listeners. This podcast will always be a safe space for the families of the victims.
The criminal justice system is pretty straightforward. Usually, a crime occurs, it gets reported to the police, and investigators get to work peeling back the layers of deception.
We are here to raise awareness of the inequalities in our criminal justice system, which commonly comes from insinuations throughout each case.
We call for social change for the wrongly accused, where insinuations of guilt change the lives of innocent people forever.
We call to action the protection of children and families.
Join me, Deborah Norman.
And me, Marianne McCullough.
As we bring you a different case each season that inspires you to make a change.
You're not just listening to another podcast. You're breaking through the bystander effect and make a real change in our society.
Find us on Instagram and TikTok at Insinuation Podcasts, and let's get started.
This podcast was done some time ago between Deb and I. As you guys know, Deb from Dying to Be Found and I are coming together and creating a new podcast called Insinuation. We're going to get into it. We're going to discuss it. However, you might notice a few things in this podcast. I didn't realize at the time, but I had had a stroke. I ended up having a few of them. And I was struggling with a few issues. And as I've been going through editing this podcast, I can hear it. Deb, bless your heart. You worked with me. You helped me get through it. And I don't know how you did it. We did this because we wanted to get Kendra's case out there and Kendra's information. And I apologize to Kendra's family that it took me so long to come together to edit this podcast to get it out there. Again, for you listeners who may not be fully invested in this podcast, and this may be the first one you're coming to, but I have something called non-compaction cardiomyopathy. One of the biggest problems with this is a genetic condition in your heart. I will probably go into it again a little bit later because I want listeners to be educated about this. Yes, it is a rare condition, but doctors are picking it up more and more. And it may not be as rare as they thought it was. More people are being diagnosed with it. Unfortunately, the biggest way and the biggest issue with this is cardiac death. So a lot of people, they are determining have it. They're finding out after the person has lost their life. I've been lucky so far. When I've had issues, and I now have a wonderful defibrillator in my body to help me. But another side effect or another problem with it is you have these things called trabeculations in your heart that create blood clots. Normally in that situation, you are on Coumadin or some other medication that helps dissolve those blood clots. Me, not only was I given by wonderful genetics, this heart condition, I was also given some other genetic anomaly where blood thinners do not work on me. So I'm a paradox of a problem. I thank all of you for tuning into the podcast. I will try to go through and edit some of the areas where you can hopefully try to understand what I'm trying to say, but it's obvious I am fumbling for the right words to put together. So, come with us on the journey of Marianne having a stroke in the middle of a podcast. This is a new one, folks, for all of us. Guys, it's Marianne, Dog Mom Baker, True Crime Podcast Maker. And yeah, it's been a little bit, but we're back. And when I say we, I mean not just the dogs. I am joined with Deb from Dying to Be Found, soon to be my partner in fighting crime on the Insinuation podcast that I talk about so much. And I am excited about our future. Deb, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Marianne. It is so good to be here as always. It's good to see you. It's good to talk with you. And I love how you are starting to talk about Insinuation, because I'm not quite there yet on Dying to Be Found. I really am trying to find a way to let listeners know that I'm shifting over to this great project that you and I have planned for the spring of 2024.
Yeah, I am so excited. And just to let our listeners peek a little bit more into the background of Insinuation. After 34 years of trying to find answers in Krista Martin's case, and finally, after all of this time getting the answers, I wanted to do more. I wanted to help people find answers in their loved ones' cases. And one of the things I'd kind of noticed was how many cases go wrong because of half-truths, because people are out there, because of other podcasters, because of other true crime creators jumping to conclusions before law enforcement has a chance to get all of the information out there. We definitely saw it in the Idaho case. And that immediately made me think, oh my gosh, you know, we need to do something to get at the heart, to get at the facts of cases and work with law enforcement, to be a true crime creation, working with law enforcement to get the answers out there. And for listeners to give listeners a chance to not be bystanders, but to be actionable in these cases, for them to have a chance to not create havoc in a case, but to actually help authorities. And I thought, oh my gosh, who is the best person in the world to do this with me? Well, hell, Deb from Dying to Be Found. So that there is not a better co-host and partner throughout all of this that I could think of. And that has become such a wonderful part of this journey. You know me, I'm always creating my own words, and I've kind of come up with this theory of the true crime effect. Now that true crime has become this overbearing genre, it seems like when something happens, even something as banal as a car accident, people are immediately going, oh, foul play. Oh, there's someone to blame. There's a villain. So let's immediately find out who the villain is in this case. Kind of like, I don't know, Deb, if you were following at all the unfortunate case of the men who had frozen to death in the backyard, the Kansas City Chiefs fans that were big fans of the game, and they had, unfortunately, and I'm so sorry for the families of the victims out there, who had frozen to death out there. You aware? Did you follow that?
I did. It came through my social media feeds only just a week ago. So I started following a lot of things that are going on in Kansas. And that was one of the top stories that had come up. And you're so right. I mean, there's so many different insinuations and conspiracy theories, like you said. And I think that's where a lot of people get in trouble, is that we make too many assumptions before we find out the true story.
Right. And what people need to understand, especially, and I've started calling it the true crime effect. Mm. What people are doing is, when anything happens, people immediately try to put a stamp of suspicious activity on it.
Yes.
And somebody is immediately crucified. Somebody yes. is immediately held accountable before police are even able to sufficiently do an investigation.
Absolutely. And that's definitely human nature to portray public scrutiny. But just in itself, that is so damaging. And in this country, we are supposed to presume that that everybody's innocent until proven guilty. And unfortunately, that's not the case. But with today's society and social media, a lot of that can be misconstrued before that person's day in court ever comes.
What was supposed to have set America apart in the first place, in so many countries, that is not the case through the judicial system. But in the United States, it is innocent until proven guilty, but not anymore. As true crimers, that is what we should be doing, waiting for the facts.
100%.
And that is what we do on insinuation, is we take those insinuations and we gather the facts as we find answers.
Absolutely. And that's what I just love about this. I think, Marianne, between you and myself, we've been podcasting for a while, and podcasters tend to know their style, and we've both migrated in that direction, where you've always advocated for, you know, personal cases that are very, very close to you. Me personally, I started in a completely different direction. However, over time, it's 100% just progressed to, you know what, there's too many unanswered questions out there. There's too many people that are being looked at probably in the wrong light. We don't have all the information. It's so important to provide those facts so that we can get people to act upon that and make your decisions and advocate for others, because sometimes people cannot advocate for themselves.
And I think what's going to be another exciting piece of this is, anybody who listens to The Social Detective, I've always been kind of Kansas focused. And yes, our first case will be slightly Kansas focused, but dealing with a United States problem. But we're going to be taking this podcast across the United States, and we are going to be looking at different cases, and we're going to be looking at our first case, Zoe Felix, a 5-year-old young girl who was sexually assaulted and murdered. But there's so many other layers to that case mm-hmm. and DCF involvement. But we're also going to be looking at those who are wrongfully imprisoned. We're going to be looking at just a multitude of different cases. So our listeners are not going to be pigeonholed into just one ideology.
That's right. And one of the things in our hashtags that we're already putting out there on social media is to take action, advocate, repeat. Because Absolutely. Just because you have one storyline that's out there, one case that's in the news, there are people sitting in jail who are innocent. There are so many different things going on in the justice system that are being overlooked. And so we can never turn our back. We can never close our eyes.
Absolutely. And that's why I am so excited for this. And I'm so excited to see where it's going to go. Mm-hmm. And I'm so excited to have you join me on every time you're available to be a part of Social Detective.
Same.
And one of the things, and just we'll leave this topic, I promise, but It is our social detective listeners that got me really thinking about this, because the listeners of Social Detective, one of the things I love about all of you is you are very actionable listeners. I love when I talk about an unsolved case or a missing persons case, that you as the listeners will send me messages, thoughts, theories, what possibilities to do. You are not bystanders. You become a part of these cases. These victims become a part of your lives. And that's why all of you listeners have always become so special to me. You took Krista Martin's case very personally, and as somebody who loved her so much, to have you all welcome her into your lives as well, and then have taken each and every one of these cases we've talked about to heart and have really become actionable in each of these cases. I just wanted to gush. I know I don't have a lot of banter at the minute, at the beginning of any of my podcasts, but this one we did because we are wrapping things up here. And I just wanted to say how much I appreciate all of you listeners, because you are more than listeners. You all are social detectives. Into today's case. Yes.
Yeah, let's do it. I was going to say, though, like, honestly, you're an influencer, Marianne. And if it weren't for you, we wouldn't have this listener base that we're going to be sharing insinuation with. So yeah, let's get into this new case.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. And don't forget, though, to please, if you haven't checked out the insinuation trailer yet, it is out there. Please, you can go to our insinuation podcast trailer. It's up. You could go over, follow. We will have that available. You can click that. I'll have that on our social media. So if you haven't started following Insinuation yet, please do, because after a while, that's where you're going to be able to find me. So yep, don't forget to do that.
Just do a Google at Insinuation Podcast.
All right. So today we're going to talk about a case I've talked about in the past. And that is the case of Kendra Botello, a missing Indigenous woman from Oklahoma. But there have been some developments in this case, and we're going to get into that a little bit today.
I know this sounds like the cliche in the beginning of every Dateline episode, but when Kendra Botello walked into a room, she really did light it up. People would turn around and immediately notice her. She just had that smile, that perfect smile that would catch everyone's attention. But that smile covered up so much pain. But one of the things about Kendra's life is that she really did love her large, close-knit family. Now, like every family, it had a lot of its troubles. But she was very close to her mother and siblings, and especially her grandmother, Lillian. Kendra's happy-go-lucky spirit was very contagious. People were drawn to her. People like her boyfriend, Colby Shepherd. He was the last one with her when she disappeared. Well, not the only one. Also, their landlord, Tanya Dixon Glasgow. Kendra's family knew she suffered from a lot of emotional and mental illnesses. It all stemmed from a lot of issues she had growing up in her life, and that had led to substance abuse issues. They wondered if a lot of that might have played a part in what was going on with Kendra that day. But that's why we're all here today. That's why I'm here with Deb, is we want to raise awareness. We want to raise awareness of what was going on in Kendra's history. We want to raise awareness of what domestic violence can look like. We want to find out, did Kendra leave
of her own free will, or was it suspicious circumstances? That's what we're all here to find out. Because the family, they're left with a lot of unanswered questions.
I just mentioned I don't like unsolved cases. Marianne, this is something that I just feel going forward, and any story that I do, I just have to have those answers. And I know there's a lot of people out there that want the same. So let's do this.
Yeah, Lillian, her grandmother, I keep in contact with her, and every time I talk to her, it just hurts my heart. But she just wants answers.
Mm-hmm. It's very important to have that, I think.
So let's back up to give a little bit of Kendra's background. Kendra Nicole Botello was born August 24th, 1997. On the day she disappeared in 2022, she was 24 years old, and she had left two small children behind under the age of 5. Kendra had short, dark hair. It was styled in almost a buzz cut, and she had brown eyes. She was of African American, Hispanic, and Native American descent. She belonged to the Muscogee Nation tribe. Sadly, the Muscogee Nation is one of the many Native Americans who had a very harsh history in our country. In the 1830s, the Muscogee and Cherokee nations, who resided mostly around the Appalachian Mountains, made their way in harsh conditions from North Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, all the way to Oklahoma. If you're not familiar with their historical relocation of the Native Americans, you might be familiar with the term the Trail of Tears.
Now, interesting that you say that, Marianne, because believe it or not, I live in the Appalachian foothills. I've been on multiple day trips with my husband where we just go out on the motorcycle, just kind of take a trip up into the Appalachians and just take a look around Smoky Mountains. And there is a sign whenever we pass through certain towns, it tells me I am on the Trail of Tears. And I think that is fascinating because I grew up learning about it in the history books. But to literally have my feet on that, it's a very, very sad story. However, it's from the aspect of a historical point of view that I live very close to the Trail of Tears. It's just a interesting part of, you know, the cultural history on where I live.
Wow, that is incredible and just so moving to even be on the soil that is such a big part of the culture of our nation is absolutely incredible. Many of the Muscogee Nation continued to thrive in Oklahoma, and in 2010, the Muscogee population was estimated to be around 88,000, with most of the nation living in Oklahoma, which is a close neighbor here in Kansas. Kendra and her family lived in Eno. At the time of her disappearance, she was living at 1402 West Randolph Avenue in Enid, Oklahoma, which was mostly a quiet two-lane road in a residential area. Now, for those of you who may not know, Enid, Oklahoma is a suburb about 1.5 hours outside of Oklahoma City. It has a population of around 51,000 residents. Enid is farm-centered city. It's the third largest grain storage community in the world. Now, I didn't know that. Deb got that one for me. But Enid is not just farm country. It's a thriving suburb that seems to draw in many young professionals. The top employers in Enid are the U.S. Air Force, Coke companies, which Coke is also a huge employer here in Wichita, UPS, and Tyson Foods.
Coca-Cola?
No, Coke. K-O-C-H. The Coke men.
Okay.
Oh, there is a big, if you're into politics, the Cokes are a big discussion in the Midwest.
Okay. And two, I had no idea that so much was going on in that area. I mean, no offense to the Midwest. I consider myself, I grew up in Canada, but around the Great Lakes, and my family is from Michigan. So I am a Midwesterner by blood. So I just think it's really cool, though, that there's so much going as far as commerce and corporations in Oklahoma. That's really cool. I had no idea.
Enid is also a pretty dry area. It doesn't have a lot of large bodies of water, which, when you have a missing person, that's important. The closest large body of water is a state park wildlife preserve, which is about an hour to the northwest. On July 12, 2022, Kendra's family reported her missing from Enid, Oklahoma. Kendra and many of her family lived in or around Enid, but nobody had seen or talked to her in 5 days, which that's considered to be very unusual, according to her grandmother, Lillian, that we had discussed earlier. In fact, Kendra had just visited Lillian, like she usually did, earlier that month on or around July 4th. Her boyfriend, Colby, he was with her, but nothing really unusual occurred during this visit. What I mean by nothing unusual, though, is that Kendra and Colby, they didn't seem to be arguing more than usual or anything like that. There wasn't anything that stood out to Lillian that was overly alarming. She did, however, say Kendra was acting a little off. She wasn't her usual bubbly self. Kendra appeared to be a little quieter, a little more reserved, and it gave Lillian the impression that maybe she wanted to talk about something, but Lillian never got that chance.
So I have a question here. You had mentioned there was nothing unusual about the visit, but Kendra seemed a little off. So was this something that Kendra would come around pretty regularly, visit her family? And you should know your family members if they're having an off day. I personally can gauge very well. So if Marianne, if you were to come over and you're just having a bad day, I'm going to pick up on that very quickly. So when you're saying that nothing unusual is happening about the visit, then what was going on with the mood? I don't know. I don't even know how to ask this question. So make sure you... Okay, so I'll just go with what's in this script here, okay? So
don't go with the script. what you're doing is a good investigative. Go for it. Run with it.
All right.
Because I've got an answer
here. Okay, so Lillian has Kendra over. She's saying there's nothing unusual about this visit except that Kendra's mood may be a little off, right? Is that what I'm understanding? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I guess that to me, it's a little contradiction there. There's nothing unusual, but Kendra's in a different mood.
Okay, Deb. I know on your podcast, you do things a little bit differently, but you're on the Social Detective podcast. And on this podcast, we investigate and we ask questions. I'm really glad you brought this up because during this point, this is where things really became contentious between the family and the police officers. And this is where they believe they really started to not take Kendra's case as seriously as they should have. Anyone who struggles with mental health issues or has a loved one who has mental health issues, you might understand what Lillian was saying. A normal day isn't always a normal day when somebody is suffering with substance abuse issues and mental health issues and emotional issues. Your normal isn't always what everyone else's normal is. You evaluate normal so much more differently. Then throw fuel to that fire by the police being called to Colby and Kendra's home on numerous occasions due to domestic violence. That's when investigators start to build their own profile of Kendra. They start viewing her as this flaky, on-again, off-again, combative couple. They look at Kendra's lifestyle choices. They start to look at her in a negative light. But why should any of that matter? Why does one victim, one missing person, matter more than any other person? To the police, they created a negative profile. To me, it created a profile of why the family felt the way they felt. Why they felt ignored. Why they felt like they needed to be twice as loud to get their case taken seriously. Why they felt others' cases in the community were more important to the police than theirs. Whether that's true or not, it was the police officers' behavior as they were taking the report on Kendra's missing persons case.
Where a lot of people have had that question of, well, then it is unusual. But those families, especially this family, who multiple family members are struggling, including Kendra's own mother, was struggling with drug abuse at that time. I'm very proud to say she had posted a certificate recently that she has been sober for quite some time now, trying to find answers for her daughter. So she has been working very hard on staying sober.
Good for her.
Yes. And so when families like this, where domestic violence is an everyday thing, it's usual and unusual at the same
time. Okay, that completely makes sense now. Thank you, because, yeah, it was almost like...
But I think it's a good thing to have in the podcast, because people don't. It's like, well, that doesn't... Well, unless you're living in a daily domestic violence, and you know your loved one is in a domestic violence situation and they won't get out.
So true. Yeah. Okay.
So I think it's a wonderful thing for you to say. I think you did great.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you for explaining that to me, because I am getting some red flags here, and it could just simply be your explanation. You just have to gauge the mood whenever somebody walks in the room. So, yeah, my red flags are up here.
Absolutely. And I love that, because when families and loved ones are experiencing domestic violence, and especially when the family members know domestic violence is going on and they know that they are struggling with it, I think how you put it is a great way for our listeners to understand that even when you know your loved one is being abused, you're trying to get them out of the situation. They're just not leaving. To her, she knows what's going on. She sees she's different, but that's not unusual to her. But it is unusual.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a dichotomy of an unusual situation.
Absolutely. Outsiders looking in.
Yes. Very well said. So a few days go by, and you know how families get. Somebody gets in touch. Somebody doesn't get in touch. But shortly after Kendra had left Lillian's house, Kendra sends Lillian a text saying that her landlord was making her move out because she accused Kendra of stealing her dog.
Okay, that's unusual. Again, red flags. Do you think this text actually came from Kendra? Because in situations such as this, somebody else can be acting like them. What do you think? Is this coming from Colby?
That's a really great thing. And this is the biggest thing I would like to put out there. The landlord is accusing Kendra of stealing her dog. everywhere I have tried to search in this case, I never hear, see anything more about the dog.
And before you say anything more about that, I'd hate to interrupt you. They're living together.
Right.
Colby, Kendra, and the landlord are living together. Are they living like in separate areas? Is there a basement that Colby and Kendra are living in? Are they all just sharing the same space? If Kendra stole a dog, it'd be really difficult to hide it.
Yes. How do you steal a dog when you're living in the same home as someone?
Yeah.
That's my first question on this case that I went, what? That doesn't make sense.
And then there's no more information after that.
Right. And I tried to reach out to the Enid Police Department. I tried to reach out to the landlord because she has ties to Wichita. And it gets interesting. Hmm. So, yeah. Okay, so, and to your answer, and this is another very important part of the question that you had asked. Did this text come from Kendra? And that is a great question. And I want our listeners to always remember that. Whenever they say, a lot of times when it is said, this text message came and this text message stated this or that, did that text message actually come from that person? That is always a big question. We know that Kendra visits friends on July 6th, and she is just kind of living her life as usual.
Okay, so a couple days go by. Lillian gets this weird text after Kendra's visit, and she's still making her rounds to meet up with other people. So is there anything alarming at this point in time? Is she still, are people still seeing her along Kendra's path, or is she just communicating by text?
It appears that Kendra, and that's the thing, Kendra has a pretty erratic lifestyle, and it's around midnight on July 7th. Where Kendra does make a call to her mother. Her mother, again, says there's nothing unusual about this phone call, but unfortunately, her mother doesn't realize this is the last phone call she's ever going to receive from Kendra.
Ugh.
And it's also the last time anyone, possibly, sees or hears from Kendra. Wow. Now, I put that caveat in there because, again, some weird things happen with this case.
Yeah, so that's heartbreaking because on my daughter Shelby, she and I talk almost every day of our lives, and it would be highly unusual for a couple days go by that one or the other is not picking up that phone or even texting. So, you know, if I were not to hear from her in 2 or 3 days, you can 100% be sure I am going to pick up the phone. I'm going to be calling the non-emergency line at the local police station to say, hey, can you just drive over there and do a wellness check? Because I know my daughter and something's not right.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, parents, it's no joke. I remind my kids constantly, if you do not show me a proof of life occasionally, yeah, you're going to have somebody knocking at your door. I will find you. Absolutely. Now, everything seems to kind of come to a stop. For the next several days, none of Kendra's family members are able to get in touch with her. She's not picking up her phone. No one's seen her. And her family starts getting worried. Like I said, they keep in touch. Mm-hmm. They may not have her behavior is kind of erratic. Yes, her family, as most families, they have their issues. They have things going on, but they do keep in touch.
Mm-hmm.
They talk to one another.
100%. And the other thing too is if you're not picking up the phone, I mean, I know a lot of the younger generations only text, but you and me, anybody out there who has family members that you know you pretty much talk to on a regular basis, and they go radio silent on you, you probably need to go ahead and go check their social media. Because today is an era of being out there on all the different platforms, and if they're radio silent on social media, you know there's a problem.
And that's exactly it. Kendra's family checks her social media accounts, and there is no postings. And that is extremely... Kendra is extremely active on her social media, and there's nothing. And so that's when they decide, okay, we're calling the police. And they contact the Enid Police Department. Friends, Kendra's family, they contact the Enid Police Department, and they start passing out flyers. And a few of the local media stations, they pick up her story, but there's just very little media coverage about her case.
Why? Is that because of her demographic? Don't tell me it's about her demographic now.
Well, let me tell you Enid Police Department's version of events. Because this becomes a huge dispute on social media. This blows up. Some of Kendra's family members dispute their comments on keeping in close contact with the family on this case, and they've been left in the dark with the police department. They say police department is not communicating. They are not communicating at all. And from what I've seen, there was a couple of things on social media, on the news stations, there was a couple of articles, but yes, it seemed, and even with the articles, it came out, there was one thing where a woman came forward and said a woman matching Kendra's appearance showed up at her door in the middle of the night and asked for a glass of water. Ring her doorbell.
Was this in Kendra's neighborhood? Was this...
No. I mean, it was just some random neighborhood off down a country road.
Okay. And some hipsters just trying to be helpful, right, and calling things in.
Right. And so they say this, but Lillian is like, that just doesn't match. And Kendra is known to wear a lot of wigs. So The family in their flyers, they attach the wigs. They attach this information. The family is doing a full court press with media. But the Enid Police Department, they just didn't feel like there was there. Because one of their biggest concerns was the issues going on with Kendra at the time prior to her going missing between the landlord and Colby Shepherd. We haven't talked about Colby Shepherd a lot. But at the time that prior to Kendra going missing, there had just been a domestic violence report that Kendra had filed against Colby Shepherd.
Okay.
In fact, they were preparing to go to court.
Oh, wow. That's serious.
Colby Shepherd has multiple reports of domestic violence. And as I said, they were preparing to go to court. And the family was extremely concerned. Now, police did bring Colby in at one point, and I know that they did have his truck for a period of time. But after that, he was back out. And one of the biggest concerns, though, again, with Kendra's family, is that they really wanted communication with the Enid Police Department. And they felt like they were not getting communication. And again, we've discussed the history, we've discussed that, but they weren't getting phone calls back. They weren't getting that. And also I am aware that sometimes families can become over effusive. I mean, I've seen that personally. Sometimes you get bombarded and you become a little frustrated.
Right.
But one of my recommendations, and I recommend this to all law enforcement, is law enforcement agencies truly in these situations need to get advocates on board. as a liaison between the detectives working the cases, the officers working the cases, and the victims' families, because you run into the situation they are having right there. The family is frustrated. They're alone. They are, you know, they see Colby out there. So there is this heightened situation, and then the family is not hearing from them. So the family begins contacting them on social media. The Enid Police Department then blocks all family members on social media and blocks anything to do with the Kendra Botello case.
Are you kidding me?
I am not.
What? That's public relations right there. For if I had a family member missing and I can't get the answers, you know, I'd be going up to the police station every day. I'd be making those phone calls. I understand they've got tens and twenties other cases to do. I get that. They have a plate full of cases that they're working on, but that is not how you treat somebody with a missing person within their family. That's just not, there's nothing right about that.
Well, and even then I am trying to understand, and it's like, okay, so there are a couple of family members that are extremely outspoken, and I'm trying to process that. The problem I get is when they decide to shut off the comments on Kendra Botello's missing poster on the Enid Police Department.
That is crazy. Yeah.
The minute you shut off comments, you're shutting off any potential outlet or options for anything.
Yeah, like a tip line. If I were to see something, say something, there's no way to do that if you can't make those comments.
That is right. So I think that firestorm they received, they created in that situation.
Sounds like it, sure.
So that became just horrific. And this comes from a press release that was put out 51 days after, I mean, 51 days, only 51 days 51 after days. Kendra's disappearance. 51 days after her disappearance.
Did they feel guilty? Did somebody finally get to them to say, oh yeah, it's about time to put out some information on this?
This I'm case. Sorry. Oh, no, you're fine.
I'm like, but, I'm getting a little hot.
Yeah. But one of the things that this is, I want to give a shout out to where I live, because one of the things that was brought up in this case is that a potential sighting was in Wichita, Kansas for Kendra Botello. And when that sighting was made, we have an endangered indigenous group here for women in Wichita, Kansas. Holy shit balls. Yes, I cuss on my podcast. They went into overdrive. Every media station in Wichita, Kansas was on alert. That's how I found out about the Kendra Botello case.
Wow, good for them.
It went, yes, it was plastered everywhere in Wichita, Kansas for Kendra Botello. It was everywhere. The missing women's and indigenous endangered group were just ever. There were flyers everywhere. They had the leader of the group. She then met with law enforcement and did, and she has since done further on how to further promote and better their understanding into this. I mean, it is, I'm so impressed.
That's a very, very well-run advocacy program.
Yes, yes. It was absolutely blew my mind that, and so when I started looking into the case and I traced it back to Enid, because, yeah, once I started looking at it, I was like, there's really nothing to show she was ever I see where they're getting it from the landlord, but yeah. But yeah, Kendra's face was all over Wichita. It was everywhere. Everyone was looking for Kendra Botello.
I would like to say that's promising, and I don't know how this is going to turn out. So
yeah,
I mean, that's a plus. That's good to hear that somebody's advocating for her.
But Enid Police Department did put out a press release stating that they continue to seek any information concerning Kendra Botello's whereabouts 2 years now after her disappearance. Since the original missing persons report was filed back on July 12, 2022, investigators have been working rather diligently to follow up on all tips and leads. They have served a number of search warrants, field searched several locations, seized potential evidence, and attempted to ping Kendra's cell phone. They've interviewed potential witnesses and tipsters, collaborated with other involved law enforcement agencies. Kendra finally has been entered into the NCIC and NamUs databases. I will tell you, that took some time. Investigators say they remain in close contact with Kendra's immediate family. Although this is in their press release, although this is disputed, and I will tell you, I am in close contact with Kendra's immediate family, and I will agree, this is disputed.
So everything that the authorities are saying that they're doing, the family's disputing, you're disputing?
I am not disputing that they have done seizures.
Okay.
I am not disputing that they have procured evidence. I am not disputing any of that. The only factor of anything that is in that press release is that they are in close contact with Kendra's immediate family. Communications with the family, which is, again, law enforcement agencies, I'm begging of you, please get liaisons.
Mm-hmm.
You're overworked. You don't have the tools in your toolkit. Get advocates and liaisons.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the most important in parts of this press conference was that they said Kendra remains missing today. And she remains missing today. But somebody else we've talked about in this case has now suddenly gone missing. Let's talk for a minute about Colby Dennis Shepherd, the one who had the domestic violence case against him with Kendra Botello. Colby was Kendra's current boyfriend at the time she went missing, and things weren't really champagne and roses between that couple at all. He had a violent streak and an ongoing history of domestic violence. In 2015, when Colby was 18 years old, he was arrested and charged with a shooting with the intent to kill. Colby had run up to a vehicle and simply shot at the driver before he took off. That's up for dispute, and since that case hasn't been truly closed, I'm not going to have a lot of input with that. Colby, however, denied ever being in the area, but the CCTV footage identified that it was him. And
darn that CCTV footage.
You know, it's really bad when the cameras are always watching us these days. The biggest problem they had with that, though, is the witness that happened to be there. I mean, CCTV footage is great. And the way that case played out, though, the witness, he refused to cooperate. The DA didn't want to go any further, which that's a pretty lethal crime. I don't know why the DA's office was like, okay, you know, the witness doesn't want to cooperate. It's one of those, they look at the people's backgrounds. It's not that important. We're not going to waste tax dollars on this. Let's just drop it.
I mean, I kind of see that angle because if the witness isn't going to cooperate, but my question is why doesn't he want to cooperate?
Yeah.
So then, yes, we're going down the rabbit hole, and I can see the prosecutors can't really do, their hands are tied after that. Unless the witness wants to come forward, then they just don't have enough to go on.
But I think one of my frustrations, and this will relate to another podcast we'll have coming out where we are talking about the new House bill we're trying to pass in Kansas when it comes to canine officers. But when we are perpetuating a system of allowing violent offenders to continue because we're looking at risk potentials of prosecution, then we are waiting for them to elevate their crimes until we finally decide to prosecute. Mm. So we are looking at risk potentials. So the crime gets to a point of deadly until we get that person off the street. So
right.
It's human life until we decide to prosecute.
Yeah, that's tough.
Not only that, but while Colby was behind bars for 16 months waiting for that trial that never happened, he just happens to attack another inmate outside in the exercise yard. But at least he learned about cameras at that point in time.
Oh, gosh.
He made sure he was out of view of the cameras.
Wow.
Another inmate got the guard's attention, and they discovered Colby had stabbed someone in the neck. I didn't see where he was charged because it was one man's word against the other. Plus, Colby, he was already behind bars for 16 months when the original charges were dropped. So again, they're looking at, what's the point of going through prosecution?
So does he get something like time served already for being behind bars?
Exactly. They look at it as, is it worth it? Is it worth the tax dollars?
Sure.
So here's my thought. Could Kendra's life have been worth those tax dollars?
Wow. That's very profound.
Before Kendra, Colby was married and he had a 5-year-old with his then wife. The couple separated in 2019 because of allegations that Colby was abusive towards his wife. By the time Kendra met Colby, not much had changed. He had several domestic violence charges against him in June of 2022, just 1 month prior to Kendra's disappearance. We don't know much about Kendra's actual disappearance, but we know a little bit about what happened leading up to her going missing. Kendra was planning to go to court to testify against Colby for the alleged physical altercation between Colby and herself. Colby was arrested for assault against Kendra and was currently out on bail until his scheduled court date in July of 2022. During his arrest, Kendra stated that Colby had attempted to strangle her. I want to stop and interject something really quick because February is Dating Violence Awareness Month. I want to talk about strangulations real quick. I want to do a little PSA. If you are ever in a relationship, you are ever in a physical altercation with someone, if you are ever in any type of relationship with someone or altercation, and they ever go for the throat, they ever touch your throat in an altercation, you run. Run for the hills. Don't look back. A person that does that has a higher incidence of committing homicide.
Wow.
In a relationship. So please, those who have attempted strangulation have a higher incidence of committing homicide. So please, my PSA for the day, if they've ever touched your throat, get out of that relationship safely.
Wow. That's great information, Marianne. I have never heard that.
Yeah. Sorry, I wanted to interject that for a second.
No, these little things are very important because I middle-aged, have never heard that before.
Yeah. Yeah, that is when the moment we ever hear he touched my throat, he grabbed my throat, it's like, up.
Wow.
Huge. Male or female. If you have a female that will grab, get out. Get out. That is a dangerous human you are dealing with. Now, sorry. Police had taken photographs of Kendra's injuries from that night, and they had filed the report, so the injuries did match her description. Now, I say allegedly, because this trial would actually never officially take place. Not because of any doubts of Kendra's claims or the police reports, which contained photographs. We know at some point there was an altercation between her and Colby, and Colby was arrested.
And they don't typically, police don't typically just arrest somebody based on one person's word over the other. When they show up at the door, they get a pretty good idea if domestic violence is taking place. I mean, you know, my son Corey is a police officer, and he's told me, you know, he doesn't tell me a lot about what he does on his job, but I know he's seen that when he shows up at the door, he's going to use his judgment. So, I mean, Marianne, you're the expert here. So would you say that there's a typical behavioral pattern when the police do show up and there's enough evidence to take somebody off to jail? In this case, it could be Colby. I mean, it's his word against his. So what's your insights on that?
Absolutely. Most people, I see a trend, especially posting on Reddit. Most people say, oh, domestic violence, immediately somebody's going to go. Police generally just want to de-escalate the situation. Put the parties in two separate areas, get people off, cooled off to go home. So police will evaluate a situation. And when they decide to arrest a person, it's generally because they have found cause. Here we are, 2 years into Kendra's disappearance, and she seems to have just vanished into thin air, leaving no clues behind as to where she was, what might have happened. And to make matters worse, in the following days, Colby's domestic violence case was dropped, primarily because Kendra wasn't there. She couldn't stand up to make the statement.
Oh, gosh. And that happens probably more frequently than we ever want to say. That is so tragic.
So, in the court's eyes, Kendra was a grown adult at the age of 24. She can go where she wants. If she wants to vanish into thin air, that's probably what she did. That's okay. There you go.
I get that Kendra is old enough to make her decisions. I just need to cool off a little bit. I want to go away for the weekend. I get that. But then again, you also talked about 51 days that the police had not talked to the family. So I think it's just pretty standard that their first reaction is, hey, let's just give it a couple days and then we'll see if she shows up.
Right. So, and okay, so they're thinking along those lines. And my thing is I could see that. I could see, you know, in a normal situation, if this was a young woman who had a fairly normal, but this is a woman who had just recently filed a domestic violence report, who had just been in a domestic violence and was due to be in court in a domestic violence situation against a person who had tried to kill somebody in his past. Why would the police, to me, my first thought professionally would be this person is an endangered person. Yes. This is a mother of children who's gone missing, who's due to be in court in a domestic violence situation, of a man who has known to be violent, who has shot at somebody, who stabbed somebody in a prison yard. My first thought would not be, well, she can go off on her own if she would like to.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Now, who knows what, we never know what the police are doing behind the scenes. I do know that Colby Shepherd's truck was impounded. The police had picked him up. He had been taken in for a period of time. His truck had been impounded, so police could have been filing along. Now, we do become frustrated at times that there is no communication, and it becomes worse when the police cut off comments. They cut off that give and take to the community.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows why they might be doing that?
Yeah, and then you had said, too, if they had search warrants to look into his truck, I mean, they either found something or they didn't. But the big picture here is that Colby has not been arrested for anything. He's still out there. And the police are probably having to go through all the red tape, all these necessary steps in order to ensure that they do arrest him under the right circumstances. And that gives him a lot of leeway.
Well, what's interestingly enough is Colby Shepherd has now been placed on Enid, Oklahoma's missing persons list.
So what I am hearing from you, and I am sorry, I just cannot wrap my head around this. You are telling me that Colby is being classified at the same level that Kendra is, and that is a missing person as opposed to a wanted person based on his violent history?
Right. Right. So essentially how it's put out, and if you can only imagine how those close to Kendra Botello are feeling right now when a missing persons poster pops up on the Enid Police Department's Facebook page that Colby Shepherd is missing, that his family haven't heard from him since after Christmas, and that they are concerned for his welfare. And if anyone has heard or seen from Colby, to please contact the Enid Police Department. Even with his violent behavior, his ongoing domestic violence, you know, everything that Colby did that we talked about earlier, all of that. The fact that his girlfriend, that he had a pending domestic violence case with, his truck being impounded, all of the evidence, everything else, he has a missing poster now, hand in hand with Kendra Botello.
Do you know what this reminds me of?
What's that?
Brian Laundrie, Gabby Petito.
Oh my God, that just hurt my heart. Absolutely. I didn't even put that together.
Yeah. So many similarities, Lord, in this. And I didn't either until you had just started answering my question about the classifications here. That's insanely similar.
Oh my, that is. So the big question here is, where is Kendra Botello? Did she leave on her own? Is she living somewhere undetected, away from her family, her friends, her own children? Did Kendra have some sort of accident somewhere and has remained out of sight? Or did Kendra meet up with foul play at the hands of someone else?
To me, there's nothing really out of the ordinary that she made her rounds. She's close to her family members, and every single one of them seemed to have seen her within a very short period of time. So that behavior to me tells me that she would never have left without notice, no matter what her mental state was. She relied on her family, just based on what you told me today, Marianne. So the answers have got to be out there, and I'm afraid to say that they are currently those answers are with Colby Shepherd. So we've got to find him.
I completely agree. I completely agree. And just as an aside, Colby Shepherd does have I know at least one child. Right. He may have more than one. How much his own children factor in his life. I believe he wasn't allowed to have any contact due to abuse with his own children. So it's a completely different situation than Kendra's.
But 100%.
You know, regardless of all of the insinuations that are out there, the bottom line is Kendra's family and all of her loved ones, they need answers. At the time of her disappearance on or around July 20th, 2022, 24-year-old Kendra was last seen near her residence at the 1400 block of West Randolph in Enid, Oklahoma. It's said that Kendra possibly knocked on a neighbor's door for a glass of water. This was just over a month after Kendra's family reported her missing, but no other reports of her whereabouts have been documented. Kendra's birthday is August 24th, 1997. She is described as a biracial African-American Native American woman with short brown hair and brown eyes. Her hair is short, but she's known to wear a variety of wigs in all different lengths and colors. Kendra is between 5'7" and 5'8". She can vary between 120 to 130 pounds. She has defined dimples when she smiles. Kendra does suffer from some mental issues and substance abuse. She is classified now as an endangered missing woman. She is a part of the Muscogee Creek Nation. Although a few tips came in saying that Kendra was seen in Wichita, Kansas, we have been able to find absolutely no evidence of this. And again, I will repeat, investigators in Wichita did a thorough job of vetting this information. If you have any information about this case, contact the Enid Police Department at 580-242-7000. You can message authorities at Facebook or Twitter, or text the keyword EPDTIP to 847-411 and enter your tip anonymously. Or email the OSBI tip line at tips@osbi.ok.gov. Please reference case number 2022-6114.
Well, thank you for bringing that call to action, Marianne. It's really important for people to honestly have all that information, but again, just be on the lookout, and if you see something, say something. We've talked about the bystander effect. Don't wait. You might be the one who is making that critical call. And I will mention this too, because while you were telling me about something I didn't expect was to find out that Colby's missing. So I'm looking all this up while you're talking, and I did find a couple things, Marianne, and that is, well, let me see where I put it. That is the fact that the last known location for Colby Dennis Shepherd is in Enid, Oklahoma, which is in Garfield County, after he placed a call to his mother. And that was the last known time that anybody has been in contact with him. I don't know what that conversation was about, but his last known vehicle is a tan or gold 2008 Honda Civic four-door with Oklahoma license plate OJE660.
great. And we will have the missing posters for both Kendra and Colby on our social media. And if you have any information, please contact authorities. And also, please share. The more that these cases and faces are in front of as many eyes as possible, elevates the chances of answers in these cases. Deb, it's always a joy to spend time with you. And I can't wait to do this as a full-time gig with you. So
I'm looking forward to it. And thank you so much for bringing this story to surface, because just because I live in Georgia and you're up in Kansas, I mean, Kendra or Colby can be anywhere in the United States. And you had mentioned Mexico as well. So, you know, be on the lookout. It's always a good idea to expand the area that these stories are, you know, on top news stories, because I don't get the same news as you. Yeah. And you don't get the same news as me. So,
exactly.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to working with you, Marianne, and I hope this gives our gives your listening audience a little
insight. It's always our. We're a true crime family.
We are. And yeah, it gives them hopefully a little bit of insight on the direction that we are going with insinuation. And I'm really not here to plug anything besides the fact that we have got to find Kendra. And as much as I hate to say it, I really believe that Colby needs to be found, because we need those answers.
Right. So. And Lillian, every day, I mean, she breaks my heart. I mean, this is a woman who, she just wants answers, and she just wants someone to talk to her.
Absolutely.
So Enid Police Department, please understand, this is a grandmother who wants mm-hmm. answers. And get an advocate, get a liaison, get someone, and just help her find her way.
Yeah, and truly put it in the budget. Put it in the budget.
Yes.
You have a liaison or something. There's always ways that departments spend money. That's a necessity.
Yeah, there's many ways. I think a lot of people who've been through it would be more than even willing to volunteer to be a part of something like
mm-hmm.
this.
Yeah, you've got people who are retired. You've got people who actually have that experience, volunteer. I mean, if I had that background, I would love to do something like that. But yeah, so, I mean, there's more ways that you can help, but definitely be on the lookout for Kendra, Colby, and let's get answers for Lillian.
All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. And as always, be safe.
While we're on this subject, and it is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and don't forget also Child Abuse Awareness Month, which is going to be important for our Insinuation podcast listeners, I want to share a few websites with our listeners. The first website is 988. It's called the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, but don't let that name deter you if it's not just for if you're contemplating suicide. 988 has a lot of other resources. It helps you if you're coping with community during, if 988 has a lot of other ways to help you and help others. It has a specific area to help people and individuals with neurodivergence. It has its own site and set aside for people going through maternal mental health issues, for disaster survivors, veterans and service members, for those in grieving and loss survivors. It has a specific area for Native American, Indian, Indigenous, and Alaska Natives. It has a specific area for youths, runaways. We have a lot of runaways in the Kansas area, and several of them have become victims of sexual assault and sex trafficking. So this is something I put
on our Twitter accounts and other social media a lot. It has a specific area for Black mental health. Again, it has the suicide crisis hotline, and also for those who have attempted suicide and are dealing with the trauma of that still today. And those of you who remember, I came from a family of deaf parents. It has a specific area for those who are deaf or hard of hearing, the trauma, the day-to-day life issues they're dealing with, and it has the services to help them in the ways that they need assistance. It also has a specific area for the LGBTQIA+ area. So, it can assist you with more than just suicide crisis. It's available in multiple languages. Remember, take care of your mental health. One other website I want to shout out is the National Domestic Violence Hotline, 1-800-799-7233. You can begin with just a text, a phone call, a chat. There is an official website. It's available 24/7. The languages, it has over 200 different languages available through interpreters available. Sorry, I'm stumbling. Even this is my post-stroke area I'm talking through, and I'm still stumbling. So sorry. But I wanted to get those websites out to you while we are discussing this part of Kendra's, because it's important. As somebody who has dealt with domestic violence myself, and with Kendra's family, that is something where they knew what she was going through. They were trying their best, especially her grandmother in our conversations had discussed, you know, trying to give her the support and letting her know that they were there and doing everything they could for her to get out. There was that final where the police were called, but yes, they were still in the same household until the day Kendra went missing.
So see, here we go, insinuating. We're insinuating.
We're insinuating.
Look at that.
Full yeah, circle, that baby. Full wow. circle.
All right, so the big question here is the similarities with that, which is crazy. And
so now we're going to end up, and I know you're right, we're going to end up, Colby's going to have killed himself somewhere.
Well, that.
And yeah. We're never going to know where Kendra is.
Yeah, well, I mean, if he's missing and he's, yeah, you're right. It can go either way here. How long has he been missing? When did he disappear?
Towards the end of December.
Okay, so he's been gone for 2 months. And nobody, there's no trail whatsoever. Oh, wow.
Unless okay. He shows up in Mexico, because he knew he was, that's the only other option.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's going to be some sort of trail. But then again, how deep, how serious is anybody as far as looking for him? Are his family members looking for him? Has anybody besides just reporting that he's missing? He's not on a wanted website.
He's not
anywhere.
On a wanted. I mean, did the family decide to report him missing because they knew the police were getting closer to finding something?
Oh, and